OT has been behind the eight ball. We're 20 years, or some people claim that we're probably 20 years behind IT. I think some are 40, 30, 40 years behind where traditional IT environments would be. Like, we would never allow a Windows XP machine on any IT system in the world, ever. It just wouldn't work. Like, you would just buy a new system. It doesn't work like that in OT.
You're listening to Protect It All, where Aaron Crow expands the conversation beyond just OT, delving into the interconnected worlds of IT and OT cybersecurity. Get ready for essential strategies and insights. Here's your host, Aaron Crow.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Protect It All podcast. In the last few weeks, we've seen cyber incidents disrupt airports, power systems, critical services across the globe. Some of those were criminal or state-sponsored, potentially. Maybe they were activist-driven, but the results are the same, right? The systems we rely on a day-to-day basis are being pushed, right? They're being challenged. They're being tested. And we've known, and I've talked about it on this podcast multiple times. We talk about it at conferences. People stand on stage and talk about the risky part. You know, most of our OT, operational technology, and industrial control systems, they actually run in these environments are older. They're running on, you know, antiquated systems, older, non-published or non-updated supported systems. And they're breaking down. Even if you put in a brand new system, it's not really going to stop it. But a lot of the things that we're seeing in these spaces is the risk. You look at airports, you know, CrowdStrike, again, not an OT cyber attack, but you look at the way an airport is distributed, and you've got multiple gates. And most of us have been to an airport. You've got land side and you've got air side. On land side, you've got check-in, you've got baggage check-in, you've got, you know, the kiosks, and you've got, you know, printing out boarding passes and all of that. And then you've got the TSA, you've got the check-throughs. And once you get on the other side, there's everything, all the gates, and there's baggage handling, and there's just systems and integrations throughout that. And then you've got different airlines, and, you know, maybe this gate is a airline specific. This one's only American Airlines, or this one's only Southwest, or this is Emirates, or whatever it is, or they're multi-use. You know, they can log in as an American Airlines one, or they can log in as a Southwest, they can log in as Delta, they can log in as United. These are all intricacies that are very hard to manage and secure from a geographical perspective, from, you know, just the amount of having clearance and having security clearance to get through. And I don't mean like, you know, government security clearance, like top secret, anything like that, but getting through into these spaces, working in nuclear power, right? You know, I had to be white badge to be able to get in, even to just enter the building, not even the secure building, not even the where the reaction was. It's just to have that security. So, and if you don't have enough escorts to escort people, again, let's say a system goes down and you have to support it, you don't have enough hands. Again, going back to the CrowdStrike incident, right? You don't have enough hands to actually be able to put hands on everything to get it back up and going, potentially. There's a lot of implications with that, right? So how do you have enough escorts? How do you have enough, you know, people that understand the systems that are there? So a lot of times, maybe the first step is a cyber thing, and the rest of the steps is operation. The rest of the step is supporting. It's just getting the things back up and going, so that normal operations can happen. You're getting it back to a status of zero. You're not improving it. You're not necessarily, you know, when you're doing an incident response, you're not necessarily re-architecting and designing or even fixing the hole. Sometimes you're just getting it back up and online, even just as bad, or maybe even in a worse scenario than it was before it started, right? So, you know, really the reality check is cyber attacks on airports, transportation, utilities, they're no longer rare headlines. Like, we're seeing these things happen. And again, when I say it doesn't even have to be a cyber attack, it could just be something that's bringing down the system. Again, the CrowdStrike incident, right? That wasn't a cyber attack. Colonial Pipeline, I've had multiple people argue with me and not like it that, you know, that wasn't an OT attack. Okay, you're right. They didn't actually attack an OT system, but the OT system was brought offline. Well, they did that intentionally. The company chose to do that. You're right. But they chose to do that not because they just wanted to. They did it because they had to. So it really comes down to, you know, what used to be theoretical. You know, the sky is falling, you know, cyber theatrics, or, you know, I've seen a lot of people posting about, well, nothing's really happened. Why do we need all this stuff? And these are prominent people that cloud these things on LinkedIn and all these places, I don't believe that this is theory, right? I think there's more than enough evidence. I've seen them firsthand. I can't talk about all of them. And there's a lot of coworkers and friends and people that I know that have been on these things too. And just because it's not in the news, just because it's not publicly available information, does not mean they're not happening. I mean, just because they're not necessarily public doesn't mean that we shouldn't just do something, right? What used to be theoretical, like I said, what if someone shuts down a power plant? What if somebody takes off an airport so it can't, you know, passengers can't get through? What happens if they shut down a train? What happens if they turn off a water filtration or a water providing for a city? These things are real world disruptions. We've seen incidents or examples of this from, natural disasters, right? You see natural disasters, you see, a hurricane come through an environment and now water's turned off, electricity's turned off, like the whole city shuts down. And it becomes a third world country really fast. These types of things, they really show how connected an OT system is and how that exposure has grown faster than the potential defense, if there is any there. And to be clear, when I say an OT system, I don't just necessarily mean the PLC, the controller that is talking to a turbine or a valve or that kind of stuff. Yes, that is part of the OT system. But an OT system to me is anything that is supporting that endpoint. So again, I go back to Colonial Pipeline. The OT system, in one person's definition, was not impacted because the HMI or the PLC wasn't directly, ransomware. It doesn't matter in my perspective, because what is the OT system is anything that can impact control. If you look at NERC-SIP, NERC-SIP defines it as any single shared cyber asset that can impact, for NERC-SIP medium, any single shared cyber asset that can impact more than 1500 megawatts in 15 minutes. It doesn't say it has to be a PLC. It can be an email server. It could be just remote access, be Active Directory. Is Active Directory an OT system? I know I sound like a broken record with these things, but I've seen so many things come across. Some of them I could talk about, some of them I cannot, that it's frustrating that we still have people that are arguing that there aren't really OT incidents that are happening and that we don't need to spend as much money on cybersecurity and we don't need to be doing all these tools and detection and monitoring and all these types of things. And I think that's just a really bad message to be sending out. OT has been behind the eight ball. We're 20 years, or some people claim that we're probably 20 years behind IT. I think some are 40 years behind where traditional IT environments would be. Like, we would never allow a Windows XP machine on any IT system in the world, ever. It just wouldn't work. Like, you would just buy a new system. It doesn't work like that in OT. So we have to know that. But we, just because it has to be there, doesn't mean we need to allow it to touch the internet. We don't need to allow VNC or remote access to it directly, right? We should have visibility. We should be monitoring those things. But these are the basic things that we're not doing, right? It doesn't have to be expensive. It doesn't have to be, I don't have to completely redesign your entire network, but we as a collective need to understand where you're at so that we can put protections around. Okay, you have that XP box. Perfect. Let's make sure that we're blocking it from the internet. Nothing can get to it. And I want to monitor it. I have to know what I know what the vulnerabilities are on it because it's been published forever. Let's monitor for those things. If anybody tries to do this, 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 and this, we should monitor and alert on those things. These are not difficult problems to solve, but you have to be intentional about them. Flat network, shared credentials. Again, you walk through a secure environment and you set passwords on things and every terminal you walk up to has got the password printed on it. It's sitting on the terminal. It's underneath the keyboard. It's on the whiteboard behind it. It's anywhere, right? It doesn't do any good. Unmonitored. They're sharing credentials. You're here. You're sitting in a room and they're sharing, hey, Bob, what's your login? I'm trying to get in this machine. And they're sharing their credentials back and forth. It happens so often. Vendors coming in unannounced, whether it's physically or virtually. It's even worse, in my opinion, when they're virtually doing it. And you don't know what changes they made. You don't know what they're doing. Did they install something? Did they make a change? And then there's this belief in OT, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And although I agree with it, because making those changes can break stuff, it's also how you get to be in massive technical debt, because you never come back and fix the things, the temporary band-aids that you needed to get it working at 3 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday because the system was down. But then Monday morning when the full team comes back on, you don't allow them to touch it. So then it just stays there and it becomes the way. that's just unacceptable. Like, we've got to get to a place where we know that was a temporary fix. Now let's bring it down to the next available opportunity and let's fix that thing. Let's make it right. Let's not keep the D-Link wireless. Let's not keep the system doing the things that there's temporary band-aids are doing, right? Let's find a way to fix those things, come back to them, find some budget, find some capabilities around those things. What can organizations do now? Again, I've said this 1,000 times. I guess I'll just continue to say it and I'll get it put on a t-shirt and wear it to conferences. And it really starts with visibility, right? And everybody says, well, you can protect things you don't understand. Because I know the vendors are saying, hey, you've got to be able to see what to be able to protect it. And I've seen, again, the same people that are saying there's no OT systems. Well, I can protect things I don't know where they are all the time. I could do it all the time. Yeah. Again, let's walk through a hypothetical. Instant response. Something happens at a facility, whatever facility, you name it, a bus depot, a power plant, manufacturing facility, airport, whatever it is. How many systems do you have? If you had to replace them or you had to go check and see if they were all impacted, do you know where they all are? Does everybody know where they all are? Because it doesn't matter if one guy knows. They all need to be able to know. Are they properly documented? You know what systems they are. What do they look like? What are they labeled as? Do they all have labels? What version are they running? Like, these are questions. They seem super basic, but they don't in reality exist. There is a lack of knowledge at the right level. There's some people that know the answers, but not everyone. Again, I've been on an incident response. I've been on these outages, these response times where I hate to say the word incident. When you're doing an upgrade, when you're doing a control system upgrade, or you're there troubleshooting something with a vendor and they're trying to find all the things that are broken, making sure that we can fix all those things before we leave. But we don't know where they all are because we didn't install the system. And the guy that didn't install the system isn't there anymore. And this guy knows where some of the stuff is, but he's not exactly sure where all of them are. So we're missing 10 of them. So we aimlessly walk around this environment. And if you've ever walked around a power plant or manufacturing facility or an airport or some of these places, there's these little cubbies that you don't have a clue. If you don't know they're there, you would never find them. Not never, but it'd take you a long time, right? So little things like that can really hurt you. So start with visibility. Build a complete asset inventory beyond just, I have 5,000 devices in a spreadsheet that these are my systems. Like, know every PLC, every HMI, every sensor, tools like EmberOT and Nozomi and Dragos and et cetera, Tenable. And there's lots of tools that do it. I'm not trying to pitch a tool. I'm trying to say you need something to be able to do this. And then segment aggressively. And the reason I say segment aggressively is because some people think that a VLAN is segmentation. In my perspective, it is not. VLAN is great. But VLAN alone, if it's going into the same interface on a firewall, is not really segmentation. It's not going to restrict things the way that you're looking for. So segment them. Really segment corporate IT away from the plant network. Segment systems within the OT environment. So if I've got, again, going to a power plant, or use power plant for first. If I have a turbo control system, I'm going to segment. And power utility does this already. But if I've got a manufacturing facility, segment line one from line two. Segment a subcomponent, painting or assembly or whatever those environments are, segment those things off. That doesn't mean they can't talk. You just have them segmented so that if something happens, I can stop it. I can change a firewall rule to stop a spread. I can monitor. Hey, I'm going to see that traffic coming through. Ooh, there's something different there. Why is that? I can see all those things. When it's just one big flat network, I can't see those things. East-west communication is harder to track unless I have spans going down. I've got sensors, I've got taps, and I'm looking at all those things. But even that, I can't stop it. I can see it, I can monitor it, but I can't stop it. It's a lot harder to stop it if I have no segmentation. So segment aggressively, secure mode access for obvious reasons. I see way too many times we're giving RDP and VNC access directly to an OT system from the internet. But beyond that, right, is you want to be able to understand what's going on in these spaces. So if a vendor's coming in to make changes, you should be recording that session. You should know exactly what was changed. So you can document it, so you can understand what was changed. So if something happens, if something breaks, if there's anything good, bad, or ugly that happens, that you have a trace of it. And who did it? And why? At what time? All the things. And then zero trust, right? Is verify every user, every connection, add DLP. All these things are not going to be available for every scenario. Well, Aaron, I can't put endpoint protection on my PLC. You're right. But can you on your HMI? You probably can, because it's probably just a Windows machine. So let's do it there. Obviously, you can't do it on a PLC. Obviously, you can't do it on a control processor. Obviously, you can't do it on an RTU, you know, things like that. Of course. But where you can, do it. Next is its expansion on visibility, especially when we start talking about tools, but really seeing trouble before it starts, right? If you are monitoring, especially, you know, Sun Tzu Art of War in OT, things don't change that often. We're not patching. We're not going to the internet. We shouldn't be going to the internet. We shouldn't be installing things all the time. You know, changes don't really happen that frequently in an OT space, which means that I should notice a change because there aren't that many of them. If I look for changes in the IT environment, everybody that installs something or gets a patch or an update or reboots or plugs into a different network or brings on new hardware and plugs in new stuff, man, that's a lot because everybody's plugging in. They're plugging their phones in. They're plugging in new Bluetooth headsets and new keyboards, and they're going to the internet. They're going to new web spaces. They're installing things. All this stuff happens all the time. And OT doesn't happen that often, right? So be monitoring for those things. But you can also monitor for dark web and threat forums and social media channels about things that are going on in the spaces. There's entire services that can do this for you. Pair that with external intelligence, anomaly detection in your OT environment. You know, those are things in monitoring for unusual activity. You know, you can scan the traffic. You don't have to scan OT endpoints, but you could be looking at that traffic and understand, hey, what are there spikes? Are there things going on? Earlier warning gives you the availability to prepare, isolate, et cetera, especially if you're monitoring and something happens at site A, I can turn it off or make sure I'm monitoring and making sure it doesn't happen at site B, C, D, E, F, blah, 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 through Z. This, again, should go without explanation, but we should be protecting the edge. We have to lock down these systems. And to me, the edge of an OT system is not the corporate boundary. The edge of an OT system is at the OT system. IT, to me, is considered bad. There should be a segmentation. There should be a clear line of blocking between IT and OT. There should be an edge for OT. Does that mean it has to be complex? It doesn't have to be a, you know, huge, expensive, capable firewall. It can be a firewall. I think it should be a firewall, but it doesn't have to be the same level and capacity of your corporate edge firewall. Of course, there's not as much traffic going through it. There shouldn't be that much stuff going. That doesn't mean it's not important. It doesn't mean that you don't need something there to monitor, right? You should treat, in my perspective, you should treat corporate IT as the internet from an OT perspective. And then you should treat these endpoints as, you know, the OT systems as, you know, anything in between is high risk. You don't trust. Zero trust. Again, I don't trust my own corporate environment. I can't in an OT space. Where you can, encryption doesn't always make sense in OT. But anything that I'm going through up and down, encrypt communications, you know, disable unused ports, you know, deploy. Obviously, we talked about this a little bit ago, but deploy passive monitoring solutions. Again, Ember OT, Nozomi, et cetera, to establish, you know, behavioral baselines. But the goal isn't just prevention, right? I think we've seen in the news, it's just like with anything, given enough time and opportunity, something's going to happen. When it does happen, how quickly can you respond? That's the bigger piece to this. We're looking at response and incident response. We're not just trying to stop a bad actor from getting in. Assume they can get in. Then what? Are you planning for the worst case scenario? All of your systems are down. You run an airport and all your systems are inaccessible. What are you going to do? You run a power plant and all of your HMIs go offline. What are you going to do? Like, these are the things. How quickly can you recover? Do you have a process for that? If you had to replace your machines, if they got locked out and you had to replace them to get them back up and running, how would you do that? Do you have a team? Is there physical security that you would need to escort people? If you got contractors in, how are you going to do that? Like, all of these things need to be gone through and tabletop and thinking about what would you do in these scenarios and making sure you have a plan. Because if we all depend on the same incident response team to come in and fix the problem and a really big bad thing happens from a nation state level perspective, those same incident response players are going to be responding to, there's going to be more places they would need to respond than they can possibly respond. So the attacks we're seeing, whether they're at airports and the power grid, cross manufacturing, are all symptoms really of the same issue. We've connected these critical systems many times before we secured them. Now we're racing to close that gap. and trying to find the gaps and the holes and the chink in the armor. But we've got, you know, hacktivists and cyber criminals and nation states that are all going after these targets of opportunity because they know the visibility is low. They know consequences are high. They know if they get to a power plant or an airport or a wastewater treatment facility, they're going to hit the news. There's going to be payout. All of the consequences are huge. They're big. So if you run a critical infrastructure organization, if you work for one, if you're embedded in one, if you're supporting one, hell, if you're in a city that has support by one, which is every one of us, because we all live in places that depend on these systems, now's the time to build resilience. Make these conversations. Start having these hard discussions, asking these questions. Cybersecurity and OT is not about perfection. It's not going to be fancy. We're not talking AI. We're not talking any of those things. It's about survival, right? It's about getting these things back up and running as fast as possible in a safe way, right? Before people get injured, get hurt, there's an impact that is beyond what we want to accept. So I appreciate you listening to this. If this episode hits home, someone in your network is responsible for industrial or critical infrastructure, definitely share this. If you have ideas, if you've seen some examples of these types of things, hit me up. Love to have a conversation about incident response or some things that you've seen in the space that worked or maybe you have struggled with, et cetera. But definitely, if we want to stay ahead of the next cyber threats, like we've got to be on the same page. We've got to be willing to have these hard conversations and also not attack people. I get really tired of people coming after someone because, they say there's an incident and they don't think it is an incident or that wasn't an OT thing. Like, we're all on the same page. We're all on the same team. We're trying for the same thing, right? I do this podcast because I enjoy it, because I have these conversations with people. And I think it's important. I think it's extremely important to do this and do more and push the envelope because I still see way too many risks and not enough resolutions being done. So that's all. Thank you. Until next time.
Thanks for joining us on Protect It All, where we explore the crossroads of IT and OT cybersecurity. Remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts to stay ahead in this ever-evolving field. Until next time.